One of the things that we have been doing it is every once in a while going through some of the books of the Bible just to get an overview of what the book is about. I'm supposed to be up to 1 Kings. Started twice trying to write an overview of it and said it's hard to put together an overview of 1 and 2 Kings. So I'm jumping ahead to 1 Chronicles for right now, because that basically does cover the same period of time that we talked about in 2 Samuel. The book of 1 Chronicles basically starts with the death of Saul and ends with the death of David. The chronicle, unlike 1 and 2 Kings, which was basically written as the history occurred, 1 and 2 Kings for the most part was written as events occurred. The chronicles were written at a later period. You take a look at 1 Chronicles chapter 9. 1 Chronicles chapter 9. And in verse 1 of that chapter, 1 Chronicles chapter 9, verse 1, it says, "So Israel was enrolled by the genealogies, and behold, they are written in the book of the kings of Israel. And Judah was carried away into exile to Babylon for their unfaithfulness." So here at the beginning of this book, it already notes that Israel had been taken away into captivity. But notice also it says that there were things written about it in the other book. The writer of Chronicles knows about the books that we know as 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, 1 Kings, and 2 Kings. In fact, some of the lineages that are recorded in 1 Chronicles extend all the way up to Ezra's day. You take a look at 1 Chronicles chapter 3, because Chronicles starts with a genealogy list. But in 1 Chronicles chapter 3, look at verse 22, and I'm not going to do a very good job on all these names. But it says the son of Shechanani was Shemaiah. And the sons of Shemaiah were Tahatush, Igal, Beriah, Nehiah, and Shepheth, six. Now, notice some of those names. Hold your finger there and turn over to Ezra chapter 8. Ezra chapter 8. And look at verse 5. Ezra chapter 8 and in verse 5, and it says the sons of Shechaniah, the son of Jehaziel, and 300 males with him. Shechaniah is mentioned in both places, and they're the same person there. So what most people believe, and it makes sense, though it's not directly stated, is that Ezra was the author behind 1 and 2 Chronicles. Because most of the things that happened end in Ezra's day. Most of the genealogies, most of the other things go up to Ezra's day. And the other thing they noted, as well as the time period, is that if you read the style of writing that's in Ezra and Nehemiah, 1 and 2 Chronicles basically reads very similar in style. So while the same time period is being covered, it's being covered from a viewpoint that was later on in history, at the near the end of Israel, as far as at the end of their captivity, looking back at how they came to be. And the emphasis is different from 1 and 2 Kings. 1 Samuel, for instance, 2 Samuel tells us a lot about the character of David. Various historical events are selected to tell us what shaped his life and how he became the king that he was. But when we read through Chronicles, whilst many of the same events are talked about, Chronicles is more focused on the religious history. You might say that 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings are the political history, as well as the character history of the people. But 1 and 2 Chronicles is looking at the religious history. Why things, what happened behind the scenes, the things that have impacted the worship of God. Those are the events that are more emphasized in this book. Now, in 1 Chronicles, the first 8 chapters is all genealogy. And we talked about that before, that sometimes we look at genealogies and go, oh, we're going to go to sleep here, because there's all these big names, one right after another, and it can be kind of boring. Chapter 1, though, takes us from Adam up to Isaac. So here's another list that goes through the basic, here's all the people that lived from Adam up to Isaac. Now, why is that important? Well, one of the reasons is that it builds a list to say, here's where Israel came from. But it's also another accounting of all the people that lived. Because every once in a while, you'll run across people saying, well, you know, these lists, they're not real accurate because the world's supposed to be a billion years old, or several billion years old. And here's all these people that supposedly lived, and they said, well, the way they explain it is they skipped a lot of people. Well, you might say one author skipped, but two? That gets a little harder to make that argument, that they all skipped exactly the same number of generations and all that type thing. It's also hard to do that in Genesis anyway, because those genealogies have, at this age, so-and-so had that son. Doesn't leave you any room for saying, well, we're skipping generations. But in that list from in chapter 1, from Adam up to Isaac, the emphasis is placed on the various descendants of Abraham, showing all the nations that descended from him, because there were more than just Israel from Abraham. Isaac had two sons. Edom was one of the nations that came from Abraham. But Abraham actually had other sons. Ishmael came from Abraham. The Arab nations descend from Ishmael. But he also had 6 other sons that people forget about after Sarah had died. And so those also became part of the Arab nations and some of the other surrounding communities. So to explain not only where Israel came from, but where their neighboring nations came from, Chronicles then lists out where this came from. So chapter 1 takes us from Adam all the way up to Isaac. All right, not Isaac, Israel. No, Isaac. I had it right. Chapter 2 continues that list. But here we'd look at Jacob, who's Isaac's son, Israel, and extends that genealogy up to David. And the reason for that is that of all the kings of Israel, David is considered the founding king, even though he was the second king in Israel. David is the king of Israel because God had promised him an eternal throne. And so the emphasis is then taken to say, here's where David came from. Chapter 3 then takes David and extends it up to basically Ezra's time. So it's all of his descendants. So we take it up to Ezra's time to say, here's what happened to David's family. And then we're going through chapters 4 through 8 is the various tribes of Israel. And what is being listed out here is the heads of families. Here's where the major families in Israel came from. The tribes that they belong to and what families and how they interrelate. In chapter 4 and verse 9 is one of the many places where you find these little interruptions and there's lots of them in Chronicles. We got a long genealogy, but in the middle of chapter 4, verse 9, is a very interesting interruption. It says, "And Jabez was more honorable than his brothers, and his mother named him Jabez, saying, because I bore him with pain. Now Jabez called upon the God of Israel, saying, Oh, that thou wouldst bless me indeed, and enlarge my border, that thy hand might be with me, and that thou wouldst keep me from harm, that it may not pain me. And God granted him what he requested." And it goes right back into the genealogies again. That prayer is a very interesting prayer. We don't know much about Jabez other than his history. We just have a prayer that Jabez prayed and that God honored it. But what we are told, basically, because it interrupts the genealogy, there's something really, really important about this prayer. Things that we can learn about it that's worth saying, here's a side bit of history that everybody ought to note. And we can talk about that prayer, hopefully, in another lesson here in the upcoming weeks. But I don't want to spend a whole time talking about that, just that one prayer. In chapter 5, down at verse 25, so 1 Chronicles 5, and then down, jumping down to verse 25, is another little bit of history that's being mentioned. And it says, "But they acted treacherously against the God of their fathers, and played the harlot after the gods of the people of the land, whom God had destroyed before them. So the God of Israel stirred up the spirit of Pul, the king of Assyria, even the spirit of Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, and he carried them away into exile, namely the Reubenites, the Gadites, the half-tribe of Manasseh, and brought them to Halah, Habor, Hara, and the river of Gozan to this day." Here's an explanation. What happened to the northern tribes? Well, they got wiped out by Assyria. Why did they get wiped out? Because they were not following after God. And they had gone led off into captivity. This also then tells us, while Assyria did destroy northern Israel, they didn't destroy all the people. They took them away. Now, since in this list of tribes, when we get to the tribe of Benjamin, which is listed in chapter 8, with Benjamin's lineage then comes Saul's particular lineage, which is at the end of chapter 8. So we get, while we're going through the lineages of the tribes, we get down to Benjamin's tribe. Saul's of the tribe of Benjamin, so his particular genealogy is then listed out in more complete full. Because he, after all, he was the first king of Israel. Then in chapter 9 is a list of those who returned from captivity. That's chapter 9. It's a list of those who returned from captivity. If you haven't figured out, Chronicles is basically a book of lists. For the most part. In chapter 9 and verse 1, it mentions the captivity of Judah, and again it tells us why. "So all of Israel was enrolled by the genealogies, and behold, they were written in the book of the kings of Israel, and Judah was carried away into exile to Babylon for their unfaithfulness." In other words, they did the same thing Israel did, and they received a similar type of punishment. And included that is a list of the descendants of Saul. So not only do we have Saul's genealogy in chapter 8, now we have the descendants of Saul in chapter 9. But most of what chapter 9 says, here's the families that came back from the captivity. And with chapter 10 then begins the actual history that we want, that we can find in Chronicles. And chapter 10 starts then with the death of Saul. And if you think about it, how many books, you know, we start out with genealogies, we can understand, we're saying here's where everybody came from, here's what happened to everybody. But if you're going to write a history, do you start with the death of the first king? Most people say, no, we need to talk about how the king first got picked and lead through it and stuff like that. But remember, this is a religious history. And from a religious point of view, the only significant part about Saul is that, yes, he was picked as king, but that his reign ended. And that's what allowed for David to begin his reign. In fact, we're told why Saul's lineage ended. It's in 1 Chronicles chapter 10, verse 13. So Saul died for his trespass, which he committed against the Lord, because the word of the Lord, which he did not keep, and also because he asked counsel of a medium, making inquiry of it, and did not inquire of the Lord. Therefore he killed him and turned the kingdom to David, the son of Jesse. So as far as from a religious point of view, Saul's just a footnote in history. What we're interested in is David. But so we start off with just saying how Saul ended his kingship so that David could start his. And then the remainder of Chronicles is the history of David from a religious point of view. Again, we have similar stories that you find in 2 Samuel, which is mostly about David. But some of the stories are skipped, and different ones are emphasized in this part. So from David's then listed from chapter 11 out to 29. So what was considered significant? Well, starting with chapter 11 through 12, is the establishment of David's reign. We don't talk about the history of how David tried to escape Saul. We don't talk about all the difficulties he had or the conquering of Goliath or anything else that shaped David. We're interested in the religious history. And what we see in chapter 11 and 12 is things like David's respect for his men. So in chapter 11 and in verse 15, now three of the 30 chief men went down to the rock to David, into the cave of Adullam, while the army of the Philistines was camping in the valley of Rephaim. And David was then in the stronghold, while the garrison of the Philistines was then in Bethlehem. And David had a craving and said, oh, that someone would give me water to drink from the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate. And so the three broke through the camp of the Philistines and drew water from the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate, and took it and brought it to David. Nevertheless, David would not drink it, but poured it out to the Lord. And he said, be it far from me before my God that I should do this. Shall I drink the blood of these men who went at the risk of their lives? For at the risk of their lives they brought it. Therefore he would not drink it. These things the three mighty men did. Notice, you know, this particular event's not recorded in Kings. But it was significant because it showed David's attitude towards his men. It shows David's respect for life. These people went at the risk of their lives for just because I had a whim that I wanted a drink of water. He said, I'm not going to drink this. It's not worth it. And he shows his respect. And what you find then also in this section is a long list of the supporters of David, those who helped him begin his reign. And then chapters 13 through 16, those chapters are about the moving of the tabernacle. Think about all the things that happened in David's reign. But we jump straight to when the tabernacle gets moved, because this is a religious history. And this was the next major significant event in David's reign, was that the tabernacle got moved into Jerusalem. Though in chapter 14, we do have an account that includes the defeat of the Philistines. Then chapter 17 is God's covenant with David. By the way, the defeat of the Philistines in chapter 14 would have been about the time that David committed sin with Bathsheba. Nothing's mentioned of that here in 1 Chronicles. But in chapter 17 is a covenant with David, and it's a result of David's desire to build a permanent temple to God. And God says, no, I'm going to build a permanent house for you and establish his kingship. That's a significant event, again, from the religious history. This explains where both the temple started and why it's important to say that Jesus was a descendant of David. He would be eventually the king that God's talking about. And so this establishes that and records that. In 1 Chronicles chapters 18 through 20 is a series of accounts of David's battles. Because David was a warrior king. There were many things that he had done in battle. And in chapter 21 is one of David's sins. This is David's sin in numbering Israel. There were other sins that David had committed. 2 Samuel tells us about them. But this was the one that was considered important to record, to make sure that we understand David wasn't perfect. And then in chapters 22 to 29 is a record of David's preparation for building the tabernacle. Or prepares the temple, I should say. So he prepares for the building of the temple. And all the things that he picked up, the materials that he was gathered. Chapter 22 gives us the list of the material that he picked up. Chapter 23, he lays out the duties of the Levites. Here's what you're going to do once the temple is built. You know, who's going to serve when, where. He schedules everything out. One of the things of interest in 1 Chronicles 24 23 verse 1. 1 Chronicles 23 verse 1, it says, now David reached old age, he made son Solomon king over Israel. One of the things of interest is that there was a co-regency. David was still king, but Solomon began reigning before David died. And while this preparation is going on, David's getting things ready. Solomon's being trained, on the job training. This is a practice that becomes common with most of the kings of Israel. It usually, when they got to old age, if they lived that long, the next son was designated king. And there was actually overlap on the kings, which also makes it very difficult to do timing, because all the various accounts tell us what so and so many years from the beginning of so and so's reign. Okay, so we talk about 50 years into Solomon, or not 50, let's pick a better one, 15 years into Solomon's reign. Well, is that the 15 years from when Solomon first started reigning, or when he was reigning on his own? And now time begins to be a little more difficult to track. And that's what causes a lot of people's headaches. And that's why you see people saying, well, it's about, because it makes it kind of hard to figure out exactly how long things are. But in chapter 24, then, is the division of the labor for the priests. Chapter 25, he divides out all the labor for the musicians. saying, here's what everybody's going to do for playing the music, and who's going to do what schedules on what times, you know, what families are going to be involved in what type of instruments. David laid all that out, gave detailed records of that. 26 is the division of labors for the gatekeepers, the treasurers. Who's going to be responsible for the remote locations? This is all planned out by David. And Chronicles lists and records these plans. Sometimes we forget that there were remote locations. Yeah, the temple was in Jerusalem, but there were other places people could go to for instance, giving their sacrifices or giving some of their means to the temple. And there were priests located at various duty stations around Israel. Chapter 25 is David's, 27. Is in divisions for the army and the overseers and the advisors for the king. Now, David had this all planned out. He wanted a smooth transition. And then 28 gives his instructions concerning the temple. Here's what he planned for the temple. And then 29, he lists out, here's what I want for offerings to be done when the temple is built. David didn't leave a thing to guesswork. He laid it all out. And Chronicles is a recording of that information. When we get to the end of Chronicles, in Chronicles chapter 29, starting with verse 22, we have basically the reaffirmation that Solomon's made king. And verse 22, it says, and they made Solomon, the son of David, a second time, king a second time, and anointed him as ruler of the Lord, and Zadok as priest. Then Solomon sat on the throne of the Lord as king instead of David his father, and he prospered, and all Israel obeyed him. And all the officials and the mighty men, and also all the sons of the king of David, pledged their allegiance to King Solomon. And the Lord highly exalted Solomon in the sight of all of Israel, and bestowed on him royal majesty, which had not been on any king before him in Israel. There's a reason why it was a second time. We don't know in Chronicles, unless we go back to 1 Kings, what actually happened. What we find out in 1 Kings is Adonijah, one of David's sons, tried to basically run around what David had appointed and make himself king. So Solomon had been made king. Adonijah tried to overthrow that. David put a stop to it by having Solomon appointed king a second time. And this is what is recorded here in Chronicles. And then starting with verse 26, then is the death of David. It says, now David the son of Jesse reigned over all of Israel, and the period which he had reigned over Israel was 40 years. He reigned in Hebron 7 years and in Jerusalem 33 years. Then he died a ripe old age, full of days, riches, and honor, and his son Solomon reigned in his place. Now notice, by the way, in verse 29, it says, now the acts of King David, from first to last, are written in the Chronicles of Samuel, the seer, the Chronicles of Nathan the prophet, and the Chronicles of Gad the seer, with all his reign, his power and circumstance, which came on him, on Israel, and on all the kingdoms of the lands. Now some people read that and say, oh, that's, you know, three other books that we mentioned. No, what he's mentioning is the books of 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel. And what he's saying is there were three authors involved in those books, putting them together. And they're mentioned again later as some of the other authors as well. 1 Kings and 2 Kings were written by multiple prophets, writing the history as they go. Ezra then tells us the names of those prophets and who the authors were. And like I said, a lot of times we skip sections because of long, boring lists. Chronicles, though, is interesting because even though there are, yes, long, boring lists in there, there's a lot of interesting little tidbits. And it gives us a view from a different point of view. It gives an emphasis on what God thinks is important. One tells us about the character of the people and what happened. But books like Chronicles tells us, here's the things that were significant from God's point of view. Here's the things that were critical. And what's picked out sometimes is interesting. Because of all, think about all the people that lived, why Jabez? Why his particular prayer? Of all the events in David's early life, why that event about him pouring out the water? Why is that more significant than anything than like his killing of Goliath? Because from God's point of view, this shows something about the character and something about the man that tells us why he was picked to be the founder of the lineage and David's throne was established for, as God said, forever. Quick summary of the book of Chronicles. Hope that was useful and interesting to you. Now that's 1 Chronicles. We still got 1 and 2 Kings to go over and 2 Chronicles to go through. I still haven't figured out how I'm going to do that one. And so I still managed to do it in 30 minutes or 45 minutes. Anybody got hints, let me know. But in the meantime, we did gather together this evening to worship God, to learn more about His Word. And we always like to leave an opportunity. If there's anyone here tonight who wishes to become a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And if there's anyone here who is a child of God, like the prayers of brethren on the behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song selected.